Community members and allies have been occupying the Henlon Creek Business Park development site in the south end of Guelph since July 27, 2009, halting preliminary developments of the planned 675-acre corporate industrial development. The occupation serves to prevent Guelph's last old-growth forest and the land surrounding it from being forever damaged by commercial and industrial development. An eviction notice was issued for July 30th, but a Guelph court granted the people protesting at the site a one-week reprieve with certain conditions. In the following interview, several of these community members speak with Starkraven about some of the issues surrounding the development.
Can you provide some background information about the site where construction of the Henlon Creek Business Park has been shut down recently?
Well, this summer there was a window for construction to take place in Tributary A of the Henlon Creek. It was limited because it's a cold water stream, and so they had until early September to complete the construction of the first phase of development, which involved an access road stretching east-west over the property from Downey Road to the Henlon Expressway. And some people were keeping track of the quote-unquote progress of the access road. It's a wide swath of leveled ground that we're facing right now, and you can see it stretching out towards the Henlon from the creek. The construction of the access lane got as far as silt fencing being put up around the creek and many trees being cleared around a large area where the access road would cross the creek, prefabricated sort of concrete structures that would make up the culvert to be installed shortly after the protesters interrupted the construction. So what is on the site right now is what looks like a four-lane access road of just exposed dirt where the land was leveled out approaching the creek, and it stops at the creek and would have continued to the other side of the property if there hadn't been an intervention on the behalf of the people who are around the camp right now.
Yeah.
This first phase of development would have facilitated the installation of the rest of the business park, which involved a ring road for different sites for a corporate business office and potentially a manufacturing distribution center, because the site is so close to the 401. So the site could act as a hub for distribution in southern Ontario. So very quickly you see the issue not just being a matter of what's being taken away and what's being damaged as far as the ecology of the site, but also the sort of economic development of southern Ontario continuing to pour money and energy into the same sorts of industrial developments that have led us into sort of a dead end at this point.
It seems that it's not well known that there's an old-growth forest in Guelph. Can you talk about the old-growth forest?
I definitely didn't realize that there was an old-growth forest in Guelph until I was introduced to the threat against it. I think that's interesting because on the one hand, it could seem embarrassing because I'd like to think that I'm interested in wild spaces. But I think that it sort of acts as a benefit to have many people coming together and visiting and learning about the old growth forest and all the different things that are living and thriving here and becoming more acquainted with the sorts of behavior and ways of being that you can have in a space like this. So the actual setup of the camp is interesting too, because a lot of the decisions take a lot of time to talk through amongst the rotating and many different members that are staying here, which can seem tedious, but is actually very fulfilling, and because input can come from every member. Mm-hmm. And like, while there's never like a perfect execution of that process, it's good to try that, and at the same time as improving our relationship with the wild spaces that we have, also improving the relationships in our friendships and also in our relationships with strangers. The sorts of interactions that you have with people who drop by for many different reasons having interest in the site are often really surprising and often very encouraging. You get a good sense that what is going on here is not just supported, but a source of excitement and inspiration for people who are often very frustrated by the limitations of representative politics and by the limitations of the sorts of options for ways of living that take place in the city.
What about the argument that developing this site would provide jobs to those who had lost their jobs during these times of recession?
That's really interesting. And I think that's sort of a knee-jerk defense of this project that I think is really faulty, because the sorts of industries that the city is looking to expand upon are more along the lines of specialized sort of industries like agricultural technologies or life sciences, basically genetic engineering and that entire field. Guelph is actually quite a hub of that research and development already, and it's sort of a large contradiction about the image. Within the image of Guelph is that on the one hand it's seen as sort of, or it appears as a beacon of environmentalism and greenness. I do think it's a huge contradiction about how the city wants itself to appear as environmental, as an environmental city. And yet Guelph is sort of a primary hub of genetic engineering research and development. And I think the city is really interested in continuing to expand that industry here. And it's contradictory because on the one hand, having a thing like hidden old growth forest that is not well known. And I think it's interesting because I don't think that the manufacturing jobs that were lost recently would be made up for with this business park at all, because of the industries that the city has been trying to attract for the business park. And that is also to point out that businesses haven't expressed their interest yet. So there is no promise of that yet. Also, I think we're at a point in time where we need to really strongly reevaluate the direction of employment.
There's plenty of talk about there being a lot of brownfields in Guelph and them being part of a less environmentally destructive development plan as compared to the constructing of a business park at the old growth forest. What are brownfields, and can you help expand on this point?
So the brownfields in town are former industrial or manufacturing sites that have been contaminated by like the corporations that had those lands before and sort of left them trashed and sort of a burden for us to deal with now. So the city, rather than making good on their promise to make the redevelopment of those brownfield sites a priority, they went ahead and bought this site from the neighboring area so that they could develop what is now a more pristine area, so that any potential like buyer or tenant would not have to perform any sort of environmental cleanup. So rather than taking responsibility for the contaminated sites, providing meaningful sorts of work, rehabilitating the former industrial sites within the city of Guelph bought this site from the neighboring county in order to not have the burden of a contaminated site that a potential tenant would have to be liable for the cleanup of, which leaves all the sites in the city still contaminated where people are still living and sprawling outwards.
When was the site first occupied, and what can you tell me about the people occupying the site?
It started at Monday at 6 o'clock in the morning, and people met at 5 o'clock in the morning. A bunch of people came in from different cities, and there was a lot of radicals, mainly youth, who started at probably about 60 or 70 people, and we just, I think, drove up in about 10 cars and jumped out and started walking very quickly onto the site. And then we, at about 6:30, we met with the first construction crew, the Drexler construction crew, and then the one security guard, and walked into the space. They had to shut down their machines. They didn't really talk to us that much. We tried to engage them in conversation. They got their truck stuck, and we helped them get their trucks out. And that was it. We just made our presence very well known, and they left.
I noticed in pictures online that there are a few flags on this occupation campsite that I'd seen in pictures of the site of the resistance in Caledonia. Can you talk a bit about the significance of these flags?
Yeah, there's the Mohawk Unity Warrior flag. That flag was designed in the 1970s by a Mohawk nationalist, like military strategist. And that flag, the Unity flag or Warrior flag, is kind of like a symbol of Indigenous. It's become, since Oka, I guess, a symbol of Indigenous resistance across Canada and other parts of the world too, actually. Like in Mexico, and the Zapatistas actually fly the Mohawk Warrior flag. So there's, between people here and people there, there's pretty solid connections and a lot of solidarity that goes kind of both ways. There are Indigenous radicals who are very much in support that we've been in communication with from the closest reserve from here is Six Nations. It's about an hour and a half away, or an hour and away. And so we're in contact with them almost every day about kind of developments that are happening on the occupation. Yeah, and they show solidarity often. There's other flags too. There's the two-row wampum flag, which is a white flag with two purple lines go through it. And that signifies, the two lines signify, I think it was a treaty between the Haudenosaunee and the Canadian government. And it was supposed to signify two vessels that go on or boats that go on that stay like an even course and never intersect with each other, to show the Canadian culture, British Canadian culture, and Indigenous Haudenosaunee culture are two separate cultures, and that they should respect each other's independent culture. There's also the black and camo flag, which is kind of a, I don't exactly know what it means, but I think it's a flag. The black flag is an anarchist flag, and the camo kind of represents like Indigenous militancy. So it's also anarchist militancy, but so I think it kind of signifies, the black and camo flag kind of signifies the combination of those together, sewed together.
Another thing that struck me about the occupation site was that the protesters had chosen to construct a composting toilet instead of using the Port-O-John left on site by Drexler. The occupation crew is well organized and has managed to create a comfortable temporary living situation, including several tarp structures and a cooking area. Can you talk a bit about that and how that developed?
Sure. I guess half of it developed out of boredom, because people were here and, you know, starting to live here and then wanted all the basic amenities. So they're like, oh, okay, let's build a kitchen. Okay, we need to put a roof on the kitchen because we don't want to be rained on and we don't want our food to be rained on. Okay, we need shelves so we can put, like, the food away. Okay, well, we want to build, like, this, you know, washroom structure a little bit better for ourselves. Or, it's too sunny here. Let's build like some kind of like shade structure or something. So a lot of the things come out of like a combination probably of boredom and practical desire for more comfortability. So, I mean, the people here, the random people that show up here, there's all sorts of people that are here. Even like from the original day of the 60 people that started it, it's probably maybe 10 or 15 people of those original 60 that are here on the night to night. And there's not very many rules for this site. And obviously we don't want, like, inter-site violence or anything like that. We don't want... There's no drugs or alcohol allowed in the site. And that's kind of enforced. But other than that, people are allowed to... It's an autonomous zone. People are allowed to create and construct whatever they want, as long as they're not, you know, cutting down the trees in the old growth forest and like harming the Hanlin Creek, as long as they're respectful basically to the land that we are temporarily on trying to protect.
And the people in the site.
And the people in the site. So yeah, I mean, people have just kind of been going kind of bananas with creating stuff that's obviously much appreciated by everybody else. People are, you know, taking shifts cooking dinners and washing dishes and doing night shifts and other stuff to keep the occupation, like, functional and running on a day-to-day.
How has media been receiving the news about the shutdown of the construction site and the peaceful occupation?
Well, with the media, there's both good and bad media. Some people say any media is good media, but I don't really agree. So it depends on the writers. Like, some writers, like Rob O'Flanagan, is very in support of it. I think that one of the issues with the media is that they always try and what they call a fair and balanced reporting. And so they'll interview the city and get quotes from Karen Farbridge and Peter Cartwright, the economic development planner. And then they'll get quotes from us and kind of throw them together and, you know, try and have as little opinion as possible of their own in the piece. But a lot of the media actually has been pretty supportive, which is kind of funny in a way, because it's corporate media and it's owned by Torstar. So it's like you would think that they would just kind of be aligned with the city, but somehow they're not. Usually they kind of eat up the press releases of the Guelph police and press releases of the city, but it seems to be a contentious issue, and there's like a lot of popular support in general outside of the media behind not developing the old growth forest and the Hanlin Creek into a business park. So,
how has the public been receiving the news about this shutdown of the Hanlin Creek business park construction?
I don't know, because I haven't talked to every member of the public, but, and so I may get a biased opinion because I'm very close. I'm often on the site, and people that drive by the site, the mass majority of them that drive by honk at us and, you know, raise their fists in the air and stuff like that.
In support.
Yeah, there's been tons of people drop off, like, the day supply of food every day, probably within hours of the day beginning. And there's the campus kind of growing from, started kind of, like, at around 20 at night, then by the end of this week, it's probably about 40 or 50 at night every night now. There's usually about 100 people that come a day now, pretty much every day. And on we had a family day yesterday, there was about 150 or 200 people that came throughout the entire day. So, yeah, it's like a popular struggle. A lot of people are against the development of this space, and there's a ton of reasons that everyone has for being against it. I can tell you my reasons, but I don't want to talk for everybody, so.
Has anyone taken legal actions against those proceeding with protecting the old growth forest?
That's something that we're talking about. There's a lot of people who don't really recognize the legitimacy of the kind of the courts and the state bureaucracy. So some people don't want to really put their faith in going the legal and bureaucratic route because we don't recognize that system as being legitimate. But also, and that's more of an anarchist perspective. There's all sorts of people in the group who are not anarchists, but it always tends to value the sanctity of property rights, which, I mean, most anarchists don't believe in private property, and especially in this case, want to protect some of the last wild spaces we have left, and don't want to rely on these kind of, like, legal bureaucracies to make decisions for us. Mm-hmm. So, however, it is an option that a lot of people are talking about, getting injunctions against the city, and just all the blatant lies, basically, that the city is kind of just keeps pumping out in order to be able to continue with the development of the land.
I guess the question was more, has anyone taken legal actions against those protecting the Golden Growth Forest? So.
Oh, yeah, I don't know if you've heard, but there's been a $5 million slap lawsuit against seven people who apparently have been associated with the site by an undercover police officer. There's been a court injunction where people are going to try and fight on Tuesday. There's a lawsuit that's been filed against seven people in name, and then 300 Jane and John Does, at least.
300?
Well, all the people that have been on the site, I think it means them. And that's for $5 million by the city of Guelph. It's kind of against a bunch of poor people who probably mostly live below the poverty line, and there's no way we're going to be able to pay legal fees or anywhere. Obviously, the $5 million is out of the question, so basically they're just kind of pressuring with a slap lawsuit, or the threat of a slap lawsuit, this, like, you know, thing meant to scare us, basically. We'll probably all declare bankruptcy. Well, not we'll all, but whoever is named will declare bankruptcy.
The people leading the recent shutdown of the Hanlon Creek Business Park construction have clearly expressed publicly that they are an autonomous group of people and are not affiliated with land is more important than sprawl. Guelph, also known as Limits Guelph. Seeing this, why do you think Mayor Farbridge and the city councillors included Limits Guelph in this court injunction?
I don't really know much about Limits Guelph, so I don't know if I'm the best person to answer that question, although I do know that Limits has been contesting the, like, legally through the, or members of Limits anyways, have been contesting in the Ontario Municipal Board the construction plans for the Hanlon Creek Business Park. And there's also been some public events against the Hanlon Creek Business Park, and they've also organized public events on the physical site, the city-owned property, before the occupation started. So I think that is probably why they are being named in the injunction, because they're some kind of threat to organizing stuff in the future here.
Other than Mayor Farbridge and the city councillors, who are the additional main people who have been pushing for the development of the Hanlon Creek Business Park over the years?
Well, Peter Cartwright, the economic development planner, this is kind of his brainchild. There's another guy named Hans von Lowe something, I don't really know, who's also works. He's a bureaucrat or technocrat in the city hall. He's working on this project. And then they had to get, you know, permission from the Ministry of Natural Resources, the Ontario Municipal Board. And the Ontario Municipal Board, as in their Places to Grow Act, have stated that Guelph has to develop a certain amount of commercial, industrial, and residential space with different 5 and 10 and 15 year kind of projections. So there's a push from the provincial government that this kind of space should be existing, which is why the city annexed the land from Push Lynch 14 years ago and included this in the city, and then bought, you know, 70% of the land. Drexler Construction, or not Drexler, sorry, Cooper Construction bought the other 30%.
Can you speak a bit about the timeline of the they're following for the development of the Hanlon Creek Business Park, or any of the timelines related to the studies that the city is actually required to do in order for the development to proceed? Such as, like, when will the development be completed, and when will the expected investors or these investments made see any returns, and how much money has been invested?
I think that they're expecting to spend over $20 million on the industrial development. All I know is that there's 74 acres of road that they're putting in. They're going to grade all the land. They're going to make a 6-lane ring road around one of the old growth stands. I don't know a lot of the technical information about the different phases, and I don't know when it's done, and I don't know who's going to buy into the land, because I don't think anyone knows yet who's going to buy into the land. So I know it's going to be mixed industrial and commercial space and industrial warehousing, and they're trying to invite the biotech industry, which I don't personally want in Guelph, but I also don't want industry, so yeah, that's what we know, I think. Or there are a lot of people. There's someone who could probably spend an hour answering that question for you, but that person isn't me.
Do you feel Mayor Farbridge and the city councillors will eventually focus more on a less environmentally destructive development plan?
No, I kind of want to avoid that question because it's based on the assumption that development has to happen, that we have to be moving forward in progress, and I want to personally move towards, and I know I'm not speaking for the group of people here or anybody else, but I personally want to move away from the logic of constant development and move towards creating a society based on mutualism and living in a coexistence with other species instead of destroying them all the time. Yeah, I'm just sick of concrete. A thing about the brownfields in the argument for redevelopment is I don't think anyone should live around poisonous, like in a poisonous environment, which a lot of people do, and specifically poor people and people of color live in industrial brownfield spaces. And a brownfield is a space that's been contaminated by industrial or commercial development that is unusable because, or toxic and possibly poisonous to the people around, that cannot be redeveloped until it's cleaned. And so in Guelph, there's 175 brownfields that are waiting to be redeveloped, or kind of sitting there, like fallow, whatever you want to call it. Pretty much every gas station turns into a brownfield when it's done, because of there's apparently 10,000 leaking oil containers in southern Ontario, or in Ontario, actually. Not southern Ontario. So the thing about redevelopment of a brown site into an industrial space is that brownfields were created by industrial spaces in the first place, and commercial spaces, and it's not that I do want them to be clean, but I don't want them to become brownfields in the first place. And once you turn any piece of land into an industrial development with all sorts of inevitable over the period of time, oil spills, things that leach into the ground, don't go in the proper drain system, you remove the topsoil and put in gravel, grade the land, put in pavement and stuff like that. Even the designation of a brownfield as a brownfield is kind of problematic because there's a lot of places in our daily life that, if you live in urban areas, that are completely toxic and haven't been labeled a brownfield yet. So the act of industrialization is a toxic act, and so the idea of redeveloping a brownfield into another industrial space is, to me, like kind of counterproductive and just a waste of time. We need to question the industrial development in the first place that causes the brownfield.
Can you explain aggregate extraction in relation to the nearby gravel pits where the development of the business park will be and its effects to our environment?
I don't know much about gravel pit mining. So I know it's usually open pit mining on farmland, and that it's obviously pretty destructive. We use gravel in everything, like house building, road building, one of the major ingredients in cement, and I'm sure this place is going to be covered in it. There's over 300 trucks that come from a gravel pit just down Laird Road, and I think that the city plans for this development have included this 6-lane ring road so that the gravel pit trucks can move quicker between the mine and the Hanlon Expressway, where they're going to, I guess, crush the gravel and kind of develop it into secondary product. I don't know the extent of the relations between the open pit gravel mining that's happening down on Laird Road and the Hanlon Creek Business Park project.
Can you speak a bit about the archaeological assessment of the Hanlon Creek Business Park?
Well, to my knowledge, there was indigenous artifacts that, and I don't know when they're dated from, and I don't exactly know what culture they come from, but probably Ojibwe, but I'm not exactly sure, or maybe Mississauga. I'm not exactly sure when they're from, mm-hmm. But there was some arrowheads and a few other indigenous cultural artifacts that were found here, and there was some indigenous cultural bureaucratic organization that came and deemed them not significant. So that's why they're still developing this place, because it's not seen by whatever bureaucracy that this is a significant site.
What about the argument that this development of the Hanlon Creek Business Park would provide jobs to those who had lost their jobs or who are losing their jobs in these times of recession?
Well, that's a philosophical question, I guess, because they always say when they're doing any kind of development, doesn't matter if it's a nuclear site or if the army is going to war, that this is going to provide jobs for the population. I mean, if you believe in the wage economy, then you think that there needs to be jobs for people, that people need to find some kind of employment to pay for sustenance and things like that. So I guess the question is just, at what stake do you want to have jobs? What do you give up when you for a job? Is it okay to have a job if you're destroying the last old growth forest in Guelph? Is it okay to have a job, you know, if it's being a correctional officer in a prison or in the army? Or, I mean, yeah, the jobs you do, obviously, what infrastructure are you supporting? And also, you know, what are you morally willing to do? But I think it's also more than that. It's like, yeah, I mean, there's an infinite number of jobs that we could possibly have in our society, but how much farmland is there? There's not an infinite amount of that, and it gets turned into, in our society, into commercial, and especially in Southern Ontario, into like commercial and industrial and residential spaces extremely quickly. So, I mean, all of the farmland, all of the forest, I mean, there's not, in capitalist logic, there's no value other than monetary value for these things. But there's a point when we're going to need air to breathe and food to eat, and be getting ourselves into a pretty tenuous relationship with our ecosystem or what's left of it, because it's decimated.
Can you talk a bit about the move by Guelph City Council to construct the business park in the broader context of economy?
Sure. Well, we're living in a recession/depression, which is based on a lot of factors, mainly oil and corrupt banking. And because capitalism needs to expand itself constantly in order to grow at a constant rate, it needs to constantly develop more and more stuff. But the problem is that there's a finite amount of resources, and it's becoming more obvious that with that finite amount of resources, that we can't grow the way that we need to in order to continue the development of capitalism on a smooth basis. The economy basically will collapse. So I guess the idea is that there's a recession, but it's kind of a short-sighted way of looking at it, because the recession is, a lot of it is based around depleting resources. So then they think that they're going to get more jobs, which is going to boost the economy through building this industrial development. All the while, the thing that is going to run this industrial development, the lifeblood of this industrial development, is cheap oil, which is not going to exist anymore. So it's going to become extremely expensive to continue developing under this capitalist model. It's just the assumption of cheap oil to continue development. And what I think is going to happen is that they're going to create this industrial development on the idea of cheap jobs, but the development's going to be too expensive basically for industrial companies to be able to market products to at a price that's cheap enough for people to consider acceptable in our society. And all the while, because of expensive oil and the way that affects the global food chain and even heating, housing, development, things like that, the expenses are going to, obviously for the individual, are going to rise out of control. So there's going to be less people basically buying new products. And I mean, this is my understanding of the way things are going. Is my interpretation. So, and one of the other factors that you can control in industrial development is the cost of labor. And in Canada, the cost of labor is expensive compared to the cost of labor in other parts of the majority of world, or developing world, or whatever you want to name it, with free market globalization, capitalism, whatever you want to call it. Industries are en masse leaving Guelph, and You see that with W.C. Wood's factory, which is closing down in the ward and moving to Mexico. Linamar's threatened that several times, and they're very soon, I think, going to go to Mexico or a different part of the majoritative world. They already started building factories in Mexico. So, I mean, there's this industrial development's coming in at a time when, as a city, we're deindustrializing because of the global economy. So I don't know who's going to fill this industrial park. I mean, half the other industrial park across the street is sitting vacant right now. And eventually it's going to be... I just don't think it's going to be, like, used by anyone. Nor do I believe in industrial development in the first place. So, I mean, as a larger perspective, I just don't think that we can sustainably, like, coexist in our ecosystem with the type of technological development that we have right now, or we accept as normal. So yeah, I obviously don't want this development to go on, but I also think that just practically speaking, it's going to be a disaster economically, like for the capitalist people that are developing it. So we'll see what happens, but.
Can you talk a bit about the construction of the Hanlon Creek Business Park in relation to the ongoing sprawl and how it influences ongoing sprawl and industrial development?
I mean, just to reiterate that the city of Guelph, they're putting this funny kind of PR spin on how they're against sprawl. So this is one way, this development inside the city limits is a way to be against sprawl, because they could easily develop this outside of the city limits of Guelph. But in actuality, this area of land didn't, first of all, exist in Guelph until 14 years ago when it was annexed by the city of Guelph from Post-Lynch. So this is technically Guelph, but it was Post-Lynch 14 years ago, but because of sprawl, it's turned into what we consider Guelph now. And secondly, I don't know if the city councillors have even looked at this site, but this is on... Right on the edge, on the left-hand side, is the Hanlon Expressway. But the last road before this old-growth forest and farmland is Teal Drive, which is the last housing subdevelopment in the city going in this direction. And then it turns into farms and farmland. So for all intents and purposes, this is the edge of Guelph. This is what we would consider sprawl. It's not inner-city development. It's a farm, and these old growth forests to the west of us is more farmland. So this is the edge that's being developed.
What are the alternatives to the construction of this business park?
I mean, I don't believe in capitalism, so the alternatives to the industrial park is deindustrialization, that we should get rid of the industrial park on the other side of the Hanlon, tear up the Hanlon Expressway, get rid of the industrial park that Linamar owns, throw out all the city hall councillors and the bureaucracy, destroy all the prisons, then we'll start talking again, get rid of the border.
It seems there's a lot of people who would like to know how they can help protect Guelph's last old-growth forest. Do you, or has the group here, have you guys any suggestions?
Sure. I mean, if they're interested in this particular old-growth forest, they should... We welcome everybody to come, as long as they're not police, to come onto the site. And we want the politicians to come too, even to look at it. Not that we care about them. But, yeah, people should just come and look at this, go into the forest and look at the 500- and 600-year-old massive trees that they've probably never come close to encountering in their life. See what a special place this is. So many different species of animals and wild plants, and there's kind of a massive marshy coniferous and deciduous forest that is, I've never seen a forest like it. It's very unique, and it is the last old growth forest in Guelph and one of the last old growth forests in Ontario. So it's a unique thing. So I feel like for people to want to defend anything, before they can defend it, they have to build a connection to it. They have to know what it is and respect it and see, like, some of the meaning and importance of it, intrinsic value. And so I think, I mean, not that everyone who comes here has to defend it or anything like that. it would be nice. But just to, you know, if you want to know what you're missing, kind of, because this seems like everyone keeps repeating this mantra that, I don't think it's going to happen, but everyone keeps repeating this mantra, people that stop by and say they support us, but development must go on, you know, you're going to lose. They're going to develop this, so, you know, I don't think they're right, but I think that in the very near future, it may be very hard to see this old growth forest, so you should come in the next few days and see it for maybe the last time.
Anything you'd like to say in closing?
Yeah, I think that, I hope that people who are listening to this interview decide that they want to come down and support us on the site, and support can come in a lot of different ways. I don't think you guys should be scared of coming onto the site and interacting with us. A lot of people are really nice, and there's some beautiful forests. I bet you if you ask nicely, someone will take you on a forest walk or a walk around the site to show you kind of what's going on here. It's a beautiful autonomous community that's kind of developing for the last 6 days here. Right now it's kind of nighttime, and not while this is being played, but while this interview is being done, it's nighttime. There's a huge band playing in front of a fire with about 40 or 50 people here, horn instruments and all. And yeah, there's something in the air. You know, if you're sick of the way our society is going, and not just this development, but you are questioning why we are moving in the direction we are, and you kind of have some questions about capitalist development, I think this is the place to be, kind of, to figure some stuff out in your head. So I urge you to come and challenge yourself, and maybe you'll just transform.